We have a pretty valuable tool available to us that we probably underutilize as farmers and ranchers, and that is the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report. I got the opportunity to talk with Mac Marshall. He's the Vice President of Market Intelligence at the United Soybean Board and U.S. Soybean Export Council. He helps make sense of the WASD report from the soybean perspective. So, Mac, if you could first start off by sharing, what is the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report?
Sure. So the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, or commonly referred to as WASD, is the acronym there. So it's a monthly report that's put out by the U.S. government, by the Department of Agriculture, which gives an assessment of just that, supply and demand for the major commodities that the U.S. and other countries produce. So working for the Soybean Board, I'm naturally looking at this very closely every single month when it comes out for updates to expectations of U.S. crop size, things that are happening on the demand side. Certainly in the soybean industry right now, we're going through a wave of crush capacity expansion. So seeing updates that are happening on that and adjustments in demand is, of course, exciting. We also get information on exports. And you can see in the data, in the report itself, you know, where all of the countries around the world, like who the major consumers are of what commodity. And I think the data that comes out from the U.S. government is incredibly important, right? Every farmer in this country, every farmer globally, one way or another, is a market participant. And the way that you participate in the market actively and knowledgeably is by leveraging the data that you have. And as a veteran of the federal statistical system, I worked in a statistical agency for 7 years, you know, I can say that our one of the benefits that we truly have in the United States is a free flow of information, you know, from USDA, which is essential for anybody involved in the value chain here. And, you know, with that, I think clearly it's coming across, I have a real appreciation for data. And, you know, just as price discovery is important for how you're going to participate in the market, and the WASD is something that is used for price discovery. When it comes out, there's a market response. Like if a crop is smaller than expected, you see prices go up. If there's a demand headwind from some major buyer, you might see prices go down. And it covers corn, soy, wheat, rice, animal ag on a quarterly basis. So a lot of information there.
When these reports come out, it can be really intimidating. They're really long. Yeah. So when that report comes out, what's like the first thing that Mac's looking at?
So the first thing I jump to, and when I worked in the private sector and covered a number of different commodities and real primary focus on corn, that was our largest business, you know, I'd go first to the corn tables, then to the soy tables, and just kind of understand what the changes were from the prior month. You know, so now, you know, being a market analyst and commentator on soy markets, I go straight to page 15 and page 28. Page 15 has the domestic balance sheets, page 28 has the international balance sheets, and it depends on the time of the year, right? We're recording this in September on the margins of Honor the Harvest, beautiful location here in Austin, Texas. And, you know, we had a supply and demand estimates come out yesterday. And what I was looking for in a September report is an adjustment to the crop size in the United States. Once we get to that August-September period, we know a lot more about how weather performance is impacting crop development. August, you know, more germane for corn as it, you know, develops a little bit earlier in the production cycle in the U.S. September is a little bit more relevant for soy. And we saw a cut to yields there yesterday. Not unexpected. There had been a lot of weather pressure throughout, but being able to quantify how much that cut is and have a new estimate on the total crop size, that adds additional intelligence and information to anybody who's observing the market. That's certainly critical. There is a lot to digest, but like once you get in the rhythm of looking at these reports and focusing on the key variables, it does become a little bit of second nature. And certainly one key variable that is always of note for these reports is the ending stocks figure. One of the metrics that commodity analysts look at that has you know, material impact on price is the stocks to use ratio. There's generally a very strong negative relationship between stocks to use ratio, which is basically captive inventory divided by total use. So it's not just how much you have in supply, it's how much you have in supply that can meet existing demand, right? So you look at that captive inventory figure, and, you know, if you have stocks come down because you got a an issue with crop production or something, and that stocks-to-use ratio comes down, well, you typically see a price response there. We've gone through a lot of waves of this in the United States. Well, years ago, we were very much in a supply glut position from soy emanating from, in large part, the trade war. But in the years since then, as we've had demand creep back up, as the world's come back out of COVID, as you know, we've leveraged more and more international market development, and as we've seen this wave of crush come online in the United States, you know, those demand side figures have, you know, eaten into that pile that we had a couple years ago. And so that's part of the reason that we're seeing significant prices here. I'd say the biggest thing is, if you're looking at fundamental analysis and you want to understand why prices are doing what they do and look beyond what might be happening at the neighborhood elevator, it's a great tool for looking at that and understanding not just what's happening in the U.S., but in other markets too. Because once we've got harvest going here, planting is going on in South America for soy. So, you know, there might not be anything happening in the U.S. crop in February, but there absolutely is in South America. So you gotta think about things seasonally here too.
So from the farmer level, when they see these reports coming out, should they, you know, if South America is planting at that time, should farmers here be changing their game plan if things aren't going as planned down south?
Well, it's an interesting thing because you actually see that reflected in the market. So take last year, for example, or really the last 2 years. So in the 21/22 marketing year for soy, Brazil had a really rough time in the crop and lost maybe 15% of its expected production. Brazil is the largest soybean producer in the world. So when you have a cut of that magnitude, it's pretty substantial. And you do see that reflected in commodity market prices. Since soy is a globally traded commodity, those reductions in production in Brazil, you know, have an influence on the price that farmers can sell their soybeans for in the United States. So this past year, Argentina had a crop failure that certainly took a lot of soy out of global balance sheets. Brazil had a good crop that offset a good chunk of it. But overall, with that supply tightness in Argentina, that had, you know, material impacts on overall soy markets as well as soy co-product markets, specifically meal and oil. You know, Argentina is the largest exporter of both. And when it's not able to grow as much soy and then process as much soy, it can't export as much of value-added soy products in the form of meal and oil. So you see those markets rise as well. And that's part of the reason, too, that we've seen an uptick in meal exports this past year out of the United States. So it's all integrated. Agriculture is something that really does, no matter where we are in the world or where we are in the value chain, whether, you know, we're a farmer or a consumer who's never set foot on a farm, it is something that ties us all together. And the impacts of something on the other side of the world, in the world of ag, do come back no matter where you are.
So this report comes out once a month. We see something in the report. Should we panic? You know, what should we do when we see something that we're like, oh no, things aren't headed in the right direction?
Well, I think anytime you're analyzing data, the really important thing to do is think about signal and noise. Signal and noise. What you want to do is take it in a greater context. Okay, there are plenty of times where analysts will second guess some of the numbers that come out. We might have had, as an example, I'm just making this up, might have had really, really intense drought pressure, but you only see like a very insignificant cut in, you know, expected yield or expected production. And, you know, as a producer, maybe you know, it's like, hey, the impact was a lot worse than that. But there might be like an additional cut next month, right? So like, even if something seems amiss in the near term, you have to take a longer term context around it. And I think that beyond the WASDE, you're beyond market data, I think just data in general, that's incredibly important. And on farm, you know, farmers generate an absolute cornucopia of data, not just food and agricultural products, but data as well. And that's a new currency. That truly is a new currency. It's a new asset that farmers have. And it's an asset that's existed, but being able to harness it and the recognition of the value that it has for making better optimized decisions on farm, for, you know, proving that you're implementing, you know, sustainable farming practices, that an increasing, you know, share of the consumer voice is clamoring for, you know, if you're doing those things, you know, get the, you know, and you have the data and validation to back it up, that's an opportunity for a revenue stream. And it's also an opportunity for continuous improvement of your operations. And if there's anything that I've come to know about the American farmer, it's that continuous improvement is absolutely part of the lifeblood.
I love that. You're thinking outside of the box, and that's another way that farmers can be looking at trying to bring in new revenue. The one thing is that makes me a little nervous when you say it. I do see a lot of optimism in it, but protecting that data, that's something we don't want that to get into the wrong hands. So
Absolutely. What
should farmers be thinking about if they are going to be sharing that data?
I think just as anything else, like as a consumer, I personally wish I had more data privacy rights because, it, like I said, data is a currency. It's an asset. It's an asset with value. And you never want to give away an asset with value. Whatever it is, whether it's a physical commodity or whether it's a derivative of a commodity, or you're talking about, you know, data, which is effectively the measurement of other things that you're doing. You know, I think approaching various, you know, programs that are, you know, looking to leverage the data, or, you know, recognize where they are in the whole, you know, ecosystem here. Recognize that you're the controller and owner of your data. So try to get the most value out of it. And protect it as best you can.
What do you think the future of data or even just reporting in general, what trends are you going to be following in the future?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that has absolutely been prevailing, you know, for a longer term now is just, you know, massive data sets, right? That you can continue to layer, or someone referred to data sets earlier today as malleable data sets that you can bring together. So, you know, interrelating things that are seemingly, you know, not related at all in terms of two different data sets, I think is one thing that we're going to see more and more evolution of. There's one thing that I've always said about data, and this kind of goes back to some microeconomic principles, which is, you know, you have a law of diminishing returns, right? Like when you're, for each additional unit of output, you know, at a certain point, you're not getting as much back on it. Well, I think data actually follows a different model, right? Data is one thing where I could have 1,000 points of data and I add 1,001st point. It's made those initial 1,000 points incrementally more valuable because it's another point that either refutes or validates the patterns that I've seen in the data before. It makes every other data point that much more valuable. So I think that there's an implicit recognition of that fact, which is why, you know, companies and consumers and everybody is searching, I think very proactively, for how much more data can be generated out there that you can make claims against or that you can find ways to monetize. And it's just going to continue evolving that way. Ones and zeros.
Great insight from Mac Marshall. He's the Vice President of Market Intelligence at the United Soybean Board and U.S. Soybean Export Council. We appreciate your precious time, and if there's a topic you'd like to hear, just email me at podcasts@usfraonline.org. I'm Joanna Guza for Farm Food Facts.